This is an ABC podcast.
G'day, it's Clint Jasper with you. It's lovely to have your company as we head out with our reporters exploring a big country. This week, handing over the reins of a farming business that's been a labour of love. We'll meet a couple preparing for the bittersweet moment of passing on their olive grove to its new owners after 25 years spent establishing hundreds of trees. We'll explore a very modern vertical farming system. It's housed in a shipping container and is operated with the touch of a button through a smartphone app. And we'll find out how art displayed on the side of a highway is helping to drive passing trade into country towns in central Queensland.
We need all the help we can get in these little towns, or, you know, like just to get people to stop, you know, get some fuel, a cup of coffee, you know, have some lunch, and, it all helps. It's a great thing that we're doing here with this art trail, because it's just something totally different. So we get people that just pull up and they're obviously doing the trail down the Bruce Highway, and they've come in to the back street of Merrionvale, which is the hub of our town. So we have quite a few people that pull up and have a look, and then they either come in and get a cold drink or some lunch or some dinner at night. So it's been good.
Giving local businesses a boost by taking art to the people. That story's coming up. First today, we're joining a motorbike convoy that's hitting the road for a charity ride in Central Australia. Those taking part are remembering a friend who lost his life in an outback accident more than two decades ago.
23 years ago, Terry Gill was riding his Harley Davidson into the sunset along the Ross Highway towards Alice Springs. He'd spent the day on the bike being filmed for Troy Dan's Outback Adventures reality TV show.
My brother Terry, they called him Fish, he got his bike going first and headed off, and it doesn't have a real good sort of a headlight on it, and he headed off down the road, and about 5 km down the road there was either a camel standing on the road or they walked in front of him, and it was just a tragic event where he hit this camel and threw his head back, and my brother broke his neck, and that was the end of it. At the funeral there was 500 people there in the Alice Springs Catholic Church there, and it was overflowing, but not everyone could get in. He had people from all walks of life, accountants, lawyers, garbage collectors. He talked to anyone, he had a whole range of friends, and he was just a friendly guy.
Fisher's friends agreed to honour his memory by riding their motorbikes in convoy from Alice Springs in Central Australia to Ross River Homestead, about 80 kilometres to the east, then back the next day. They called it Fisher's Run. More than two decades after the accident, his friends are keeping the tradition strong. Hello, I'm Saskia Mabin. I've joined the tattooed and leather-clad crowd taking part in this year's convoy. More than 100 bikes are hitting the asphalt, with Brian Gill leading the pack, riding his brother's vibrant orange 1978 Harley Davidson shovel.
And that's the one he hit the camel on, and it wasn't very badly damaged. I mean, the kickstarter broke off and the tanks got dinged, and there was a few dings on it, but he could have ridden it home. And all his friends put it back together and did it up again and got it back on the road, and it's come out here for every run. Except for last year, but it's been I've ridden that out in the lead for 23 years.
At the picturesque Ross River Resort, everyone sets up camp. There are go-slow races where the last bike to cross the finish line is the winner. Bar mats, merchandise and artworks are auctioned off, some items fetching thousands of dollars. A band begins to play, and a man called Flash, with a long grey beard and wearing a black leather jacket, is hosting a cheese tasting at the back of a van, sharing his own homemade varieties. Another man is handing out fresh crabs from his caravan, while the smell of roasting chicken wafts across the campsite from the back of a car, where a couple is selling gyros. Like the crowd, the quality of food at this event has matured. All the money they raise goes to local charity, the Butterfly Connection.
You end up with money, and it was always hard to get rid of the money to charities, or always had issues or problems. You couldn't just give it to the hospital or anything like that. And I was reading the Advocate paper, and I heard the radio on, and the song from my brother's funeral came on, and I was reading the story about the Butterfly Connection and Rachel, how she was starting that up because of her daughter had cancer, and I got all these the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I thought, this is a sign.
The reason why the butterfly connection started was because when my daughter was two, she was diagnosed with cancer, and she turned 21 this year. So. So we're very, very happy to have her with us still. And we're very, very happy that this is the 15th year we have been involved with Fisher's Run. So we've actually gone back through the times and had a look at how much money has been raised for the Butterfly Connection over the years. Who reckons it's 100 grand? More? More? 150? 200? $228,970. Give yourselves a pat on the back as well as a hand.
The next day, everyone packs up their campsites and rides back to Alice Springs. Until next year, when they'll do it all again.
They put in a lot of effort to come here, and they come every year, and they just like, it's a good event, it's a friendly event. I mean, when I first started organising it with some friends, I thought, what the hell am I doing, you know, putting alcohol and all these bikies together, it's not a good recipe, but they look pretty scary, but they're pretty soft guys, really.
Oh, look at this one, John, they're really forgiving us now for the drought.
Yeah,
we've got
starting to form
buds.
Flower buds.
Flower buds, yes. And so I think next year Jodie and Dom are going to be fairly busy with their harvest.
Yep, and a good thing.
After spending 25 years establishing and cultivating this olive grove in northern New South Wales, Barbara Levick and John Atwood are preparing to hand it over to its new custodians.
My parents used to joke that when little kids liked picking lollies out of a bowl at parties, I'd pick the olives out of the bowl.
Started young.
Lived in Greece for a little while, and where there's very much a culture, and the trees are so beautiful and revered.
Hello, I'm Lara Webster. I'm here with Barbara and John at Bellwood Grove, near Tamworth, where they're getting ready to say goodbye to this property that's been their labour of love for a quarter of a century.
We bought the block in the mid-90s, and I just believe that if you own land, you have a responsibility. You've got a responsibility to do something to make it productive. It's a valuable resource that perhaps in Australia we don't value enough. So I think whether it's growing vegetables in your backyard for your own use or actually creating something that is productive for other people, I think that's important. So we chose olives because we love them. We love the trees, we love the product, and they're a fairly forgiving crop compared with, say, grapes, which locks you into a fairly rigorous schedule. So we haven't regretted going down that direction.
Over the years, how have you grown your production, and what have you done with your olives? Because you haven't just been picking olives, you've been doing all sorts of things with them.
Well, I think because we've got a very small place, as with a lot of agriculture, you either go niche and vertically integrate and become innovative, or you go into the mass production side of it. And there are olive groves that are very much into the thousands of trees, the mechanical harvesting. Whereas when you've only got a relatively small number of trees, there's challenges and opportunities. Hand-harvested olives actually can give you the opportunity for a much better quality product. They're just not damaged. You can pick a little earlier in the season. We had concern way back at the beginning, because that was the beginning of a lot of groves being planted in this area. Mm-hmm. Our concern was that a lot of people planting trees were then relying on someone else in the next step of the production, and that someone else hadn't stepped into the picture at that stage. So we actually bought a little press ourselves, and so we could vertically integrate, and because we both worked off farm, that gave us the opportunity to harvest all weekend, then press straight away and then go back to work.
There's a lot of joy and passion and the smile on your face when you're talking here. John, I'll bring you in as well. What about for you? What's this journey been like alongside Barbara?
Well, it's been a partnership. The harvesting process was the two of us harvesting. The processing was the two of us, or whichever one of us was available, doing the pressing. The markets, both of us go and we talk about our product with the people who come along. We've always worked together. I think we complement each other in our skills and our outlooks, and every now and again we disagree, but you know, that's nature, isn't it? Yeah, it's been a very productive partnership, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter in our life, which will be different, but it'll be a continuation of our friendship, our partnership and relationship.
Yeah. Well, what is the next chapter?
There's a little bit of a question mark. I think there's, you know, I've got another garden left in me. And obviously when we moved here, we planted hundreds of trees. And so I think there's a few more trees to be planted in my future. But we just want to be freer, so to jump in the caravan and go somewhere interesting.
You are leaving, but you are leaving this in the hands of a new family who want to continue things. What's it like to be able to know that this, what you've built here, will continue?
Oh, it's huge.
Yes. A huge relief.
I think our agent really felt that the Grove, we had to prepare ourselves for somebody to come in with a bulldozer. And while we were prepared for that, when the new owners, Jody and Dom, said, oh no, we'd like to keep the olive trees, there's a lot of years gone into getting them to this stage, we just said, no. thank you. You know, I just feel that it's almost as if, and I said this to John the other day, how would we feel if we'd been 20 years younger walking in to this place at the stage it is now? Because 20 years ago it was a wheat paddock. There was nothing here. And I feel that we're handing over to somebody who values what we've done and has the creativity and energy to take it forward.
Olive grower Barbara Levick. She spoke to reporter Lara Webster as she prepared to say goodbye to the Grove that she spent 25 years planting and nurturing in northern New South Wales. Before that, Saskia Mabin joined a motorbike convoy in Central Australia, and you can see photos and read more on that story on the RN homepage, abc.net.au/RN. You'll find a Big Country under the Programs tab. I'm Clint Jasper, with you for a Big Country on RN. Still to come, growing salad greens under bright lights in a high-tech farm pod. And we'll take you to the Queensland Highway that's become a pop-up art gallery.
Along the Bruce Highway in central Queensland, travellers are doing a double take as giant, colourful sculptures greet them as they approach the tiny town of Merriamvale.
It's the first time ever in the state that we've had sculptures placed along the highway. And the idea behind this was to, firstly, as part of a response to COVID last year, was to provide employment opportunities for our local CQ artists.
Lee McIver is the curator of the Rapton Mughal Arts Project.
Also to encourage people into the two tiny towns of Boroughan and Merriamvale to get our visitors traffic to stop and spend a bit of money in there, because those towns have been doing it pretty hard.
Local publican Mitch Brennan says it's working.
Well, this one here itself has brought quite a little bit of business to the pub. So we get people that just pull up, and they're obviously doing the trail down the Bruce Highway, and to get them off the road, they've come in to the back street of Merriamvale, which is the hub of our town. And so we have quite a few people that pull up and have a look, and then in turn that they either come in and get a cold drink or some lunch or some dinner at night, so it's been good.
Hello, I'm Lucy Loram. I'm here outside Mitch Brennan's pub in Merriamvale, where an interactive sculpture created by artist Jenny Fournier, called It's a Mad, Mad World Again, is drawing people in to stop and take a closer look.
The area that is outside the pub here just sort of lent itself to being something where people would walk past, and instead of making it out of their reach, kind of. I thought, well, may as well make it something that they can actually interact with, and sort of been quite exciting, really, to have so many people be able to look at it.
As curator Lee McIver explains, Jenny Fournier's sculpture is one of several artworks featured in this project.
The Rapidi Moogle project involves five pieces along the highway. It's a 20-kilometre stretch of the highway, the Bruce Highway, so it runs probably about 4 kilometres north of Merionvale, comes into Merionvale, stops at the pub, and then wanders back down the Bruce Highway towards Gingin, so probably another 14, 16 kilometres south of Merionvale.
Gladstone artist Callum White is one of the younger artists whose work is featured.
Although it was really tough to put together and transport and everything else, it's really great to have that feeling of, you know, I've completed this, you know, it's here and people can see it. Being only 19 years old, it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. It's great to have a platform like this to be able to display my piece, and not only that, it's great to have people in the art community that look up to things like this. And through this exhibition, I've made a couple of new contacts, which has led to me to new opportunities, and it's absolutely fantastic.
For her contribution, former professional diver Jen Holstein has created a massive sail featuring an underwater scene.
For the past 5 years, I've been working as a professional diver in marine conservation and research across the world. So I've taken a lot of those daily encounters with the reef and put them into my artwork to try and create a very vibrant and aesthetic, which appeals to people as they drive by and which comments on the inextricable link between the land and the ocean, and the fact that we need to try to protect the ocean to actually sustain our life here on land.
Christine Holden is known for her environmental artworks, which are displayed in various parts of central Queensland.
The materials I've used are marine debris mainly, so it's very labour intensive. There's a lot of work involved. There's well over 100 metres of ghost netting and materials like that that have gone into the base of these as well. So, yeah, hundreds of hours of work, but it's art with a message, and that's where I like to come from. Under the current circumstances, I think art and culture are things that we really need to focus on and cling to at the moment. They're a big part of our life that, you know, we need, and just for your own mental health and well-being.
Curator Lee McIver says the project has created a buzz in the local arts community.
The 13 artists that are involved in this were like ecstatic and so excited at the opportunity, particularly the opportunity along the highway, because it's such a high exposure site and it gives them a chance to actually get their works out into the public arena.
And publican Mitch Brennan says it's provided a welcome boost to his town.
We need all the help we can get in these little towns, or, you know, like just to get people to stop, you know, get some fuel, a cup of coffee, you know, have some lunch, and, you know, it all helps. It all helps, and this is a great... This is it's a great thing that we're doing here with this art trail. It's just something totally different. It has been good for the whole town.
For artist Jen Holstein, being a part of the project has had its own benefits.
So art for me has really been, you know, a means of therapy to get through this time. Obviously, I'm very far away from my family and don't know when I'll be able to go back and see them again. So, yeah, having a creative outlet has really just kept me sane through the whole experience.
I think it's lovely to be able to appreciate art. It's like music, it just gives you a good feeling.
From the outside, it looks much like a regular shipping container. But when you step inside this metal box, it's bursting with greenery. Salad greens and herbs are growing from the floor to the ceiling under the glow of bright LED lights. This modern vertical farm relies on the latest technology to operate at the push of a button.
The whole farm, as I mentioned, is run off an app. So if we have a look at our monitors, it tells us that our irrigation cycle has started up. So we can set the cycle to however long or short we need it. It's drip irrigation from the top, filters through to the bottom, and it's caught in the gutter that is at the bottom there. We've also got two holding tanks. They hold our water, and also we have pumps that will feed nutrients into the water.
Hello, I'm Lucy Cooper. I'm standing inside this vertical modular farm known as a grow pod at TAFE Queensland's Toowoomba campus. I'm here with TAFE school manager Elaine Wallace. She says the modular farm is challenging students' perspectives on traditional agriculture.
It's a fascinating piece of equipment. I suppose the main aim for us in having this grow pod or this modular farm is at TAFE we're all about teaching our students, you know, the latest technologies that are out there. And often when people think about agriculture, they think, oh, I don't want to go stand in the sun all day picking vegetables, or, you know, oh, that's a bit too dirty for my liking. Yet they appreciate where their food comes from. They want to be part of an industry. And I think this is just one of those technologies that really enables students to get involved in something different and something up and coming. So students have an opportunity to come in here, have a look at these technologies, have a look at what vertical farming and hydroponics is all about, but also maybe start thinking about, well, what's the next step? Where do we go from here then? And maybe research what comes after vertical farming, what comes after being able to operate the farm using an app on a phone. And so the possibilities are endless. And I think the amazing thing about this grow pod is that it doesn't just speak to our agriculture students, but it speaks to the students who may really be interested more in being a water technician, or our electrical students, even our IT students. Maybe, you know, for the budding IT students out there, you could develop the next big app that the next farmer is going to need in order to produce crops like you see today.
We're standing in the pod at the moment. I'm seeing some basil, a bit of kale. I want to say, what's this stuff here?
So that one is actually mustard. So mustard greens give your salads a little bit of spice. And when you leave it, of course, it will go to seed. But the idea of why we planted it was for the salad leaf before it goes to seed.
Yeah, so we are, it's all leafy greens I'm seeing.
Yes.
Is that what the modular farm is limited to, or are there other things that you can grow?
No, look, there are absolutely no limits. Of course, leafy greens are the easiest and the fastest to grow. So for us here, the aim is training. So you're wanting a student to be able to follow the plant through from seed through to harvest. So we're not looking at crops that may take, you know, the long periods, the 6 months to 12 months before they can be harvested. Another thing to consider, of course, is this is an enclosed environment. So anything that would produce a fruit would need to be hand pollinated, because there are no bees in here. So look, and that's why you see all the leafy greens, is that they're quick to grow, they're easy to harvest, and they make a fantastic training tool. But again, we get back to the beauty of introducing school students to this technology. There are no limits. So if you want to grow some fruit bearing or something that's a veggie, you know, just give it a go and just see where you land up.
I think with the fruit, you better get the tweezers out. Very specific.
Or a paintbrush, and we're going to have to be painting flowers. We are actually, I joke, but we are actually going to try some strawberries. So get your paintbrushes ready and we'll see how we go with those.
For students like Kalia Stebbins, the grow pod has been a revelation.
It's very impressive. Like, I didn't realise that you could grow crops like this compared to, like, just out in the middle of a field, get them out and they don't have, like, animals coming to ruin the crops and all that stuff. And it's all controlled by an app, so it's very cool.
Totally. And I mean, you're studying rural operations. Is this something you may want to have a look at, maybe doing something related to hort?
Definitely is. Yeah, definitely. Now that I've seen this, it's very cool. I'm very interested to learn more about it.
Teacher Nev Sievenhausen of the hospitality and cookery team actually use the products from the modular farm in their classes at TAFE Toowoomba.
We've been working with the horticultural team as late as last year, and we've looked at what type of materials and products that the guys grow for their teaching, and then we've looked at how we can integrate that within in what we do with our teaching, and we also have a cafe and a restaurant up in the main area as well in the campus. So pretty much most of the product we can put to use. For us and for our students, it's a great opportunity to obviously shorten up the duration and travel of the product, so we can also get that really good response from paddock to plate. And it's great for our guys to see that, you know, different ways it can be grown,
And it's nice that it's protected, obviously. It's pretty much a standard product all the way through. I mean, you can have a look at the quality of that basil right now. It's just amazing. So, yeah, it's a real benefit for us. And again, for our guys to learn that there's alternative ways to grow produce and receive produce, which is great. And you can see that this will be moving into the future. A lot of climatic changes and transportation and particularly disruption now with COVID around the world. So, this product and this option is great for us. We love it.
Teacher Nev Siebenhausen from TAFE Queensland, ending that story from Lucy Cooper in Toowoomba. You can see photos of the GrowPod modular farm and read more on that story, along with all of the stories on today's program. Just go to the RN homepage at abc.net.au/RN and look for A Big Country under the Programs tab. That's the show for today. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.